This is Return to You podcast with me, your host, Erica Straub. Each week, I'll drop in with thought leaders and soulful healers for expansive conversations on resolving the conflict trauma created between you living and loving directly and intimately. To be fulfilled and satisfied in this lifetime, you have to bring your true self forward. But first, you gotta ask the question, who am I? I'm so excited to introduce you to David Chambers. You will instantly feel safe in his presence, grounded, and an ease in the way that he shows up, holds space, and communicates. He is known as the authentic man, and he specializes in the areas of dating, relationships, and intimacy for men. With more than a decade of experience, he has honed his skills in empowering men to develop deeply connected relationships and vibrant sexual lives. His coaching technique, deeply rooted in building self-awareness, emotional depth, and self-leadership, guides men through the intricate dynamics of modern relationships. David's profound vision for the authentic man is to liberate men from the constraints of pain and fear, facilitating journeys towards authentic, life-altering relationships. He stands as a key influencer and motivator for men striving to achieve deeply felt happiness and enduring connections. Let's drop in.
I truly just want to get to know more about you. I'm so attracted to your work and like just I've been reading just different things that you've shared and like your own evolution. So I just love to start with like what initiated you into this kind of work, like into the becoming, if you will.
What initiated me in? My own pain, I guess. You know, like a lot of people, I wasn't good at relationships, right? I wasn't good at like real intimacy. Mm-hmm. I could put sort of labels on why that is. Like I come from a long line of absent fathers. So there was no men in the house. My mom, you know, she doesn't have a great relationship track history. So I didn't see any sort of modeling of good relationship. And I probably spent a lot of my years believing that. And I was really honest. I remember telling, an ex-girlfriend. Yeah. I think at the end of the relationship, I was like, I don't believe relationships can work. Mm. I truly believe for a while. I was like, I won't get into relationships. I refused. I met wonderful women. I can really be lucky in my life that I have met truly wonderful women. They generally gravitate towards me and my experience. And that's how I like to choose my experience as well. But I was like, relationships don't work. It's not possible. Like, I can't do it. I don't know how to do it. I was fully in that camp of like, you know, if you had met me when I was 26, 27, you know, I'd go out on dates and multiple dates and women would be like, you're amazing. Like, you're doing all these things of your life, blah, blah, blah. Like, I like you, you like me, let's get into a relationship. And I'm like, no, they don't work. Like, if you want a relationship, you need to go find a different man because I'm not that sort of guy. And I, you know, then kind of persuaded to be in a relationship with someone and we lasted for 4 years, which was probably life-changing for me in like learning to be more patient, learning to like be with her emotions, like when they came up, but also learning to like say my own and not just be worried about upsetting and hurting, because that was a thing for me. Is like, oh, if I say truly how I feel, you're going to get upset. And if you get upset, I have to deal with your being upset. And I would rather not do that. So I'd rather not say how I feel. Okay. And we broke up because I didn't express how I felt. I still didn't do it. We broke up. We're in Bolivia and I was lying in a bed in a lovely, a very small hotel in a town called Sucre. And I was crying in bed and I was like, I'm not going to let this happen again. And I said it to myself. I was like, as if I like told the universe, I'm not letting this happen again. And then I just went on a bit of a journey of like looking deeper into me and understanding me and how I was being and doing various modalities of work. Getting coaches, doing heart medicine, a lot of coaching, group coaching, like a lot of relational work, reading up about a lot of relational work. And it kind of got me to this place where a friend of mine asked me to do a podcast with him. He was like, look, we know so much about dating, especially, and how that dating isn't about all this strategic stuff. There's deeper parts of dating that make the authenticity, the fun, the joy. So let's talk about it. And we started to do that. And it kind of set me on this path of podcasting, then coaching, then more coaching, then group stuff, then deepening my learning. And then I sit here today, almost like an accidental coach.
But so on purpose, right? So on purpose. What helped you the most, like, rewrite that story that relationships don't work? Because I think a lot of us probably harbor that, and it's unconscious a lot of the times too. So like, what helped you rewrite that story?
I think a big part of it is my ex-girlfriend who accepted me as I was. And like, it was times where I'd experience, what I commonly experienced in relationships was a lot of jealousy. So I would go out to a bar with some friends, and the partner I was with would just be like, on my case, like, where are you? Why are you not home? What are you doing? And then I come home and they'd be like this barrage of questions. And I'd be like, no, this is crazy. Whereas she just got it. She got me, right? Mm-hmm. I had female friends and they were friends of mine. And some of those are women that I dated many years before, but we were just friends and that was it. And she got it and she accepted it and she was able to see it for herself. And that relaxed me a lot in, I can trust you because I can feel that you can see me. You can see how I am as a person. But I think also I had a felt experience of things working. I think a really big thing for me was I never saw conflict modeled in my life between couples. Like, I never saw conflict happen, like conflict resolution, like reconnection, re-entering into intimacy. I never saw that. I saw conflict, people not talking, and that was it. Like, even my father with me, if there was conflict, he would shout at me or say some stuff to me, and then he would just distance himself. So I never learned the art of like repairing conflict. And I guess in that relationship of 4 years, I had to deal with repairing conflicts. And I started to learn a very simple thing that I think a lot of men have is like, oh, if something goes wrong in the relationship or there's a disagreement in a relationship, it doesn't mean it's terminal. Mm-hmm. Like, if someone disagrees with you, it doesn't see something the same way. It doesn't mean your relationship has to end because you're on completely different tracks. It's just that you might see this one thing differently and you just can accept that. And I think that started to transform for me. It was like, oh, we can just accept that we see things differently. Or, oh, because you're upset, that doesn't mean the relationship has to end. Or because I'm upset, like, I can get over that. I can move past that. And I think inside those 4 years, as well as having a lot of really great fun and lovely moments together, I learned a lot about relationships and how to be in a relationship, a functional relationship especially.
Yeah, I think that the art of rupture and repair, right? Like, it's an art, it's a dance. And I think most of us, myself included, like, repair wasn't part of the equation. So rupture meant ending. Like, any kind of rupture, doesn't matter how small or how big, but like, nervous system is like, this is over, they're gone, I have to run away, or I have to do this. But it's like that sense of like, it's over comes in. And so I'm curious, like, how would you say someone starts working with that or learning to kind of stay when the nervous system is flooding in conflict, when they're maybe on the precipice of learning repair? Like, how do we stay in that space to learn the art of repair?
Mm-mm. I think it has to start with like a willingness and desire, right? To be in the energy of conflict. Because if conflict comes up and we're like, I just want to eject from conflict all the time, every time conflict comes up, I want to eject, then all that happens is then we will always find an exit, because there's always an exit, right? I think it's the Gottmans, and they have the concept of exits. Is it the Gottmans? No, it's Harville Hendricks. Think, get the love you want. Yeah, let's get the love you want. They talk about the concept of exits, like how we leak energy out of the relationship. In a conflict situation, a conflict arises, and one of the exits for a lot of people is numbing. Like, okay, I'm going to go and play video games, or I'm going to go shopping, or, you know, whatever is the stereotypical things that men and women do, but there's numbing. So part of the initial thing is like being willing to stay in the energy of conflict, in the energy of like, we're in conflict. And right now, I hate you. Yeah. You don't have to say it. It's just like being willing to go, that's the energy, and we can stay here, and we can get through this. Mm-hmm. Like, there, I might not see a way that we can come out this other way loving each other more, mm-hmm. but I can I believe there is a way to do that. I believe in my capacity to do that. And I believe in your capacity. And actually, I don't even need to believe in your capacity. If I can believe in my own and like the fact that like we're beings and we can work through this and we're willing to do so, staying there, like my practice was just sitting and breathing in front of my partner. Especially my now partner, when she's upset and she's crying, just to sit there and breathe. Like, and we did this for like 20 minutes. You know, she told me like when something happens and she's upset, what she really needs is me to stay there in the room with her and be still and be grounded and be open and be loving. And how I did that was to sit and breathe and look her in the eye and keep the front of my face soft, my eyes open, even when it was difficult, even when she stormed out the room and came back. And that, I would say, was like the most immense training in conflict and conflict resolution I could have experienced, because like she might start shouting and I would sit and listen. And then I would always respond from a place of calm because I was sitting there and I was breathing and I was observing my story about just leave. This relationship's useless. It's not going to go anywhere. And just observe the story that's happening while also sitting there and being like, okay, I'm in this. I'm sitting here. Cool. I love this woman and I want this to be better. And if we can be patient in that, the number of times that it became either the conflict ran its course. Like it just had a wave to happen. And out the end would be a level of grief or sadness and deep reconnection. Or there would be an obvious point of like, there's been a misunderstanding here. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, and you could compassionately be like, I think we misunderstood each other in this way. And then talk through that and be like, I'm taking responsibility for my part. You're taking responsibility for your part and we can come out. But you have to hold the pose of conflict, to hold the energy, hold with the energy of conflict without it running you in that moment, like being present to it without it running you. Because once the conflict engulfs you and you can become flooded with the conflict and you're like, I'm ready to fight or run, fight or flight, then we say things we don't mean. We leave and remove ourselves, which creates more pain. So for me, that was a really like the initiation of just being in conflict and staying there and enabled me, like now I just believe there's pretty much anything that happens between me and my partner, we can stay. And I've seen it in couples I've worked with. It's like, you can see the desire to exit the moment. Mm-hmm. And when you can get them to both stay there and stay present, they see a pathway just through being grounded and being present.
Mm. So much of that I so deeply resonate with. And I think of the idea of like being both feet in, like being able to stand on your own two feet, both feet in the moment. Like that, it doesn't mean anything beyond the moment, but how can I stay in this moment with like all of me here? Cause I think all of us, including myself, look for that exit. Like, where can I straddle this line and have one foot out and one foot in? Because I think that creates more safety, but it doesn't, right? We're just leaking energy out. And for a woman, when there's so much energy being leaked out, like that lack of safety that comes into the container is terrifying. So I love what you said, because it just really made me like think and sink into the container, right? Like what that actually feels like. And I'm curious for you, how do you hold the idea of a container, or how have you created this just like really beautiful container, it sounds like, you hold for your partner?
Mm. Yeah, I think, you know, there's like a relationship to me. It's like many different containers, a bit like a Russian doll in many ways. There's like your relationship as the entity that it is a container for the two of you to grow and evolve and experience love and pain and healing. And then there's the mini containers you can create at any moment, or that you create around how you deal with certain things. Like if, you know, one of the things, because we talk a lot about how we want to, how do we want to be in conflict, for instance? Like, And I'm like, I don't do shouting and name calling and like character assassinations. If you step into that, I have a very, very strong boundary about this. If you step into that, I will leave. Not permanently, but I will vacate the room. I will not tolerate any way, any sort of name calling and shouting and screaming, because I will never do that, because I will remove myself so that that never happens. Because I think when we step into that area, then we really have lost consciousness. So that's like a really strong boundary for me in conflict. But I think it's just like with containers, it's like conversations. It's like, how do we want to do this thing? How would you like that thing to go? How do we want to deal with this thing when it goes wrong? You know, like, because inevitably things kind of go wrong. So having an idea of like how we want to deal with things when they go wrong is beautiful. But also, we had a lot of conversations about, because me being an avoidant man, I shut down and I stopped talking. So we had conversations like, okay, inside of the container of our relationship, but inside the container of, say, when I'm not in a great mood, right? What do I need from her when I'm shutting down, right? Mm-hmm. And I was like, actually, what I need from you is for you not to keep chasing me and to be like trying to get my attention and energy, right? Because that pushes me further away. I was like, if you can trust that when I do shut down, that I will come back, right? If you allow me the space to come back, and I will come back faster if you can do that. And she was like, oof, that's a really big ask, because I feel like it's never ending. And I was like, I get that, but it's not never ending. She was like, true. And I said, okay, what do you need in those moments from me? And then we had this kind of dynamic, and I can't remember exactly. That was it. What she needed in those moments was to like feel that I still love her.
Yeah.
Right. So that might just be as simple as like saying, I love you. That might be the only thing I say all day. Right. Or like hugging her in bed when I get into bed. Mm-hmm. Right. Or something like that. But she just wanted to know that so inside of that container of like how I was feeling, and what's been magical about this is that the longer we've done this, and this is probably like 4.5 years now, if I'm like shut down, I feel stressed or anything, there might go 12 hours where I feel that way. But the connection and love we have in our relationship doesn't disappear. She's just like, oh, yeah, he's pissed off about something. Cool. But she's also not taking it personally. And that's been a whole other thing for her to look at, is like not taking it personally. But it's like having agreements around how we, you know, when things go wrong, and also reminders like how there was a one of the things we had was like, if my partner, just remember it correctly now, it's like if she starts to talk from a place of that the relationship is going to end, I could interject with a very strong sentence just to kind of knock her out of that. Again, that was another agreement we have. So I think with containers is like, if you kind of have those conversations that can set yourself up in a way that when you find yourself in certain situations, you have, you know, it sounds kind of boring, like you have these structures, but you have these agreements and you've talked about them, then it's you can just kind of go, oh, well, I know because we've talked about this. Mm-hmm. And if you've had mature conversations, you're conversating regularly. And then also talking about after certain situations happen is like, how did that go? You know, like, how was that for you? And you start to learn. And then you have less of the conversations because you know how to start to deal with these different sort of situations and create these kind of mini containers around each other and with each other to deal with the many, you know, low energy things that happen, but also the beautiful things that occur in your relationship as well.
Yeah. Yeah. And I love that you're speaking to, it's not just how we do conflict, but it's like how we prime for conflict. Mm-hmm. Like, we have to have conversations about it outside of the conflict. Because if we're just trying to navigate conflict in conflict, we're not ever actually giving ourselves the best opportunity to see it from like a zoomed out lens. So it's like setting the container for the container, essentially. And I think the follow-up piece is so important. And I think some of us might miss that piece of it, that it's actually like the circling back to it and really checking in with like, what did we learn there? What needs to happen next time? Like, how did you feel in this? Like, that check-in piece, I think, is the like solidifier of the conflict. And then our system starts to learn this is regenerative. This isn't like taking away or eroding what's here. Like this process is actually regenerative. If we can have like the primer, we can be in the conflict, stay in that tension and move differently, and then have that kind of like check-in afterwards. Like it's just this whole beautiful process that I think starts to really create so much safety and intimacy. And I think helps us so much with the anxious avoidant dance. And could you speak a little more on your journey with avoidance and like how that worked and how it even shows up now, if it does? And just, I think that's just such a common thing people struggle with. And that actually is a big response for me has been as well, that shutdown and avoid. And it's such a, it just harbors intimacy so much. So I'm just curious if you could speak a little to your journey with that.
Yeah. It's really seeing for me was like, because the way that I was like post this relationship and before I always say post this relationship, probably, you know, the last 6 years, was that if you saw me, you're like, okay, well, David loves intimacy, right? You would see me and move and I can be charismatic and I can be in a bar and talk to people and I have no issue with like physical touch and closeness. But there's a, it's an emotional closeness for me that really gets to me, or a spatial closeness, like we and my girlfriend have a, there was a joke, there's something we saw on TV, and I think there's some argument in some TV program we watched because someone left a toothbrush at the person they slept with, and we paused in. I was like, so she goes to me, okay, so if I left my toothbrush after like one night of staying at yours, what would you have made that mean? And I was like, okay, so I'm going to pretend the conversation I'm going to have with my friend on the phone. And I was like, oh my God, she's left a toothbrush. Like she's trying to take over my space. Like, how dare she do that? Like, what is she thinking? Like, she's probably looking through my stuff before she left and all this. And it's starting to acknowledge is that like, as a avoidant person, the stories we run about the infringement on our freedom and our spaciousness and our autonomy are completely like runaway trains in our minds. So some of it was just observing, like, oh wow, the meaning that was making. I spent a lot of time with a coach, and a lot of his work is like observing the meaning that we create out of the little things that happen. And we can get into all this kind of like high level masculine, feminine polarity bits and pieces. But if you don't notice the meaning that you create out of the small things that are happening in your day-to-day life or in your relationship, right? Like no matter how much you, that polarity stuff's not going to help you because it's just too far up the ladder and you're ruining the tiny little bits of intimacy. So for me, some of it, like the journey was emotional, learning to be with emotion and sharing how I felt with people and realizing that, oh, actually people really love it when we hear emotion that has depth. And I want to say confidence. And the reason I say this is because a lot of guys come to me and they're like, oh, I started opening my heart to someone and she just called me like weak or something like that. And I'm like, how did you do it? Did you do it in a way that you were trying to get to solve your problem, that you were trying to get some sort of sympathy, or you were just like, and you're allowed to be a mess sometimes, of course, but if you're just always an emotional mess and she has to be your therapist, then this is going to create a different sort of dynamic. So I guess for me, it was learning to like express how I was feeling. While, like, and I can be quite good at this, I can talk and process what's happening for me at the same time. Sometimes I just need someone there in front of me. So like learning to be in my emotions, learning to see that like these little bids for connection that happened with my partner, like a message to me, like it isn't some way in which they're trying to steal my autonomy and steal my freedom. And like, little questions and observing it. I mean, she'd say to me, when are you going to be finished with work tonight? And I would feel this emotional reaction of like, what does she want to do tonight? Oh God, she's organized something and she hasn't asked me. And I would just stop and go, ah, yeah, wow, that's not true. She's just asked me what I'm doing tonight. You know, she wants to cook dinner for us or something, wants us to go out for dinner. And it's just observing that and just seeing the reality of it was a really, and that's ever going. I have to always be observing that because my avoidance will never disappear. It is like deep rooted, but I know how to, most of the time, I'm not perfect to, I see it. I'm like, ah, that's that thing I'm doing. Like I'm not. And then also in this relationship, what's been beautiful is we've allowed each other, like she's learned that my freedom does not mean that I want to leave and there's something wrong with the relationship. So we've then baked in times where we spend time apart, like my partner's Swedish. So she'll go to Sweden often around Christmas or something like that. And when she goes, she'll just be with her family. And we might not talk for 3-4 days, right? Or I go to, like I usually go to a retreat or two each year. And during that time, she's like, I'll speak to you when you're out. So it's like we bake in these times where we get to really be free, but we also bake in time of like extreme closeness, you know, where we're on holiday together for 5 or 6 days and we barely leave each other's side. So it's like we're stretching our own muscles in that way. And that's been really like amazing to be like, ah, if I'm close, I don't lose who I am. I don't lose my autonomy. I can still have autonomy in a relationship as well. You know, if I communicate my needs and my boundaries and my desires in a way, and this is a really important thing, that's not like, one of the habits we do is when we tell someone a boundary, we do it because they've crossed the boundary and we do it in a way that we're angry and annoyed with them. So it doesn't feel like a boundary. It just feels like we're telling them off.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas we discussed like boundaries in a, from a place of like, ah, like, so I can love you more. What I need is da da da. So it doesn't feel like I'm telling her off. It just feels like I'm saying what's there for me. So I learned that boundaries are okay. She learned that boundaries are good. And we learned that boundaries don't mean we've done something wrong. So like it's the emotional piece is really important. Learning to be with to feel when the times I'm not as autonomous as I want to. And I think there's probably one piece I think that's probably really important for me here is like, I had my heart broken about 6 years ago by a woman. She was a lovely woman. And, I loved her. She unrequited love. And I told her one day, I was like, you know, look, we've been seeing each other. I love you. And I think within 30 seconds, she was like, this is over.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, you know, that was one of the, a deeply painful moment. But I realized over those months afterwards, what I realized was the thing that I'd been afraid of, right? Loving someone more than they love me. I was in it and I experienced it. And I realized, I was like, this thing has been holding me back from really opening my heart up because I was afraid that this would happen. And I was afraid if this happened, I couldn't deal with it. And I was sitting in this space for like, after when it happened, I realized, I was like, oh, I can deal with this. Like I'm sad and I'm sometimes I have ways of grief and all sorts of things, but I'm okay. And it really set me up to be like, oh, I don't need to keep trying to like hold my heart back to avoid being hurt. And it, for me, that really set me on a bit of a like fast track of being free from that belief.
Yeah. Oh, like those moments, the things we're most afraid of, usually they've already happened, right? Or they do happen and they end up being the things that really do free us. But it comes with like the grief, right? The grief and the anger of like, I need to grieve and descend into myself. And then I need to touch into my anger and rise in my boundaries because then I'm safe. Then I can be autonomous and give my heart to someone at the same time. I'm sitting here like with the avoidance piece because it's part of kind of my DNA as well, if you will. And there's like, I think of it in terms of like closeness. Like there's a certain level of closeness that I can tolerate really easily, right? Where like that avoidance doesn't show up. It's like you can get really close to like maybe this distance and I can, you know, we can be with the tension. We're familiar with our story. So it's like, oh, there's that story again. Okay. Like I can unpack that. I know that's a distortion. But for me, I'm discovering like my edge and my line of like, if you are this much closer, then like all of this then comes forward. I don't know if you relate to that, but as you're talking about the like the emotional unpacking of avoidance, that's what it shows up for me. Like just learning like the levels of closeness, like where I'm at in my personal journey of like, oh, wow, this penetrated a closeness that maybe I haven't been before. And here's now all of this, all of my shit. And how terrifying it is, you know, for someone to be that close and to see all of that shit, like your shame that comes forward. Or for me, it was really this reckoning of when you are that close, all of a sudden I feel so codependent. But if you are this close, I'm good. You know, like I can be in more interdependence or even independence, maybe a little hyper independence, but like we're good. But the second that it's like this penetration to that like deepest level of closeness that like I've personally gone, it's unbelievable the, you know, the complexity that shows up, the splitting, the emotional pain, like all the distortions. And I'm just curious if that has kind of been what was revealed to you in your emotional journey with avoidance.
Yeah. You know, I love how you talked about it as like almost a physical distance, emotional distance. It's like, if we're like this close, it's okay. Right. And why I think this is always really interesting is because when I work with quite a few avoidant men, and they often can be, not all of them, but a number of them can be quite charismatic and they can be very attractive because they appear, especially in the early stage of dating, of being very comfortable with intimacy, right? Especially physical touch, sexual intimacy as well, and so forth, and even disclosing things about themselves that some people may think are intimate details. But in fact, they're still holding like what's really intimate to them, close to them. And sometimes it's like, for me, it's often comes up as like, I had my own place, right? And I lived in it for basically 14 years on my own. So when a woman would come into my life, my partner come into my life, when I notice her leaving her stuff in the place, that's like warning bells start going up in my head. Like, oh, is she thinking this is more than I think it is? So what I had to start to do with my partner is like, she would leave stuff and I would literally just sit and look at it. And I would notice like all this stuff coming up, like, oh my God, does this mean this? And does this mean this? And I'd just look at it. And like, it'd be like this weird meditation that she never saw me do. Well, I was looking at the stuff that she'd left. And I'd have to be like present to like, oh yeah, like I'm creating this story about this stuff. And it would be like, it was, you know, it was hard. But like, if we can catch in our awareness when it's happening, and you know, the avoidance and, you know, all our patterns, avoidance or anxiousness, right? They're so wily, they can like morph like chameleons into different things that we don't notice them. And it isn't it easy, but when it kind of all erupts and it starts coming up, and then sometimes we then project it, we then say stuff or we start to distance and so forth. Again, the key that there was for me is taking responsibility. Like, because in the past, I wouldn't take responsibility. And that's partly because I was not dogmatic, but I was always like, there's a right and wrong, and this is how it is. And as I've got older, I realized there is a million perspectives to every single moment. So, because when you're with someone and you're like, hey, I overreacted about you leaving your jacket here. And when you came back, I was a bit shut down. And I'm really sorry for that. And the reason that was, you know, X, Y, and Z. People are so much more reasonable with you when you can do that. They're so much more reasonable. And that's hard because, you know, in that moment as an avoidant person, for me, what triggers is like, I'm bad, I'm wrong. They're going to reject me. They're going to think things of me, and all these things start to come up. But I guess this is where you kind of cultivate the intimacy in the relationship. And also, you know, when I work with men, I always say it's like, you've got to cultivate a certain level of resilience as well, and groundedness and calm, you know, all those things together, that if, when you do apologize and say, oh, look, I've seen where my awareness went, and they flip out, you can just hold it, because you know that like, okay, if I can hold this with calm, this actually makes them calm in turn, right? But it is so difficult when you see the avoidance, is it, when it comes up in different areas. And it's sometimes I have to laugh, you know, and I'm quite lucky, like I, with my partner, but also some of my clients, it's like, we really laugh about it. Like they'll say, one of my one of my clients said he came home, he'd been away, and he came home and his partner was on his side of the bed. And he goes, he left the room. Like, she was asleep. He left the room. He went to the kitchen and he was like, oh, pacing around. And then he got a drink and he was sitting down. And he said there was a moment where he looked and he saw a reflection in like a window of himself. And he started to laugh because he was like, I've just gone into this whole thing that she's taking over my territory because she was sleeping in my side of the bed, right? And he said he was able to like laugh it out to himself and then go back and, you know, never told her the story. But like, I think more and more I say that we have to be willing to laugh at ourselves and the patterns, because when we take ourselves so seriously, I think that's part of what triggers us more than anything, is because we're like, we take ourselves and our reactions and our stories so seriously instead of holding them with some lightness.
When we can bring humor in it like immediately changes the pattern. Mm. But it's so hard to get there sometimes when it feels so intense. But I think that's when we have the most opportunity for change and transformation. When we can like actually like see the intensity, like had that moment of stepping out of the intensity. And it's like, I have a choice here. Like, this is actually kind of hilarious the way I'm behaving. Or like, let me own it. Like, let me actually share my truth here. And I think both of those are different pathways we can take to start kind of breaking the cycle there. But with avoidance, what do you find is like the real fear in it? Like, the fear to me is a lot about loss of freedom, loss of autonomy. Where do you think that really comes from? Like, what's at the base of that in your experience?
I see with men, it's like they have almost like a fear of codependency. It's like a fear of like, if I become too close to you, then I'll become dependent on you and I can't depend on anybody. Mm-hmm. Right. Or if we then become really close, then you reject me and I'll be helpless. So it's like, it's the avoidance of ever being in a state of being of helpless or weakness where you're dependent on someone, because it's like a, you know, when I've seen it in extreme cases, where there's just like no trust for anybody. Avoidance leads to like not trusting anybody and then being confirmed in that through various ways, because we create our reality so well, and feeling lonely and being like, well, this is how the world is. And I see at the base of it, it's like this lack of belief in other people's humanity, in the safety of connection, like, you know, all of that. And you know, I feel lucky that I've seen some of my clients as well, right? But it's like, if you get so in the story of the avoidance and like how true it is and how you can't trust anyone and how connection is dangerous and how if I'm in connection, I'm going to be taken advantage of, or if I become codependent, then look what happens to people that become codependent, right? We've got like whole like ethoses of like never be dependent on a woman, never be dependent on somebody else and so forth. And that doesn't lead us to healthy relationships, right? Because part of a healthy relationship to me is interdependence, which has a bit of codependence in it, right? It has a bit of independence in there and it has a bit of codependence, because really to co-create anything magical and amazing and like life-changing, be that a business, be that your own career, be that a family, we have to be willing to be codependent on each other in some capacity, maybe not in every capacity, but like, you know, if you've got a business, there's codependence because that's how a business works, right? Like, there is autonomy and there's bits of codependence. And it's that codependence, I think, that really at its root is like, am I going to lose who I am? Do I die if I become merged with another being? Like, I wonder if that's like the really essence piece there for a lot of avoidant folk.
Yeah, that feels like annihilation, I think, in at least to our body and our nervous system, like the sensation of it. Yeah, it's so, avoidance is so fascinating to me in that sense. I'm curious if you could speak to the anxious side then, because as we know, we you know, end up in dynamics where there's usually the anxious and the avoidant, very common. Mm. What do you think's going on for the anxious person? Like, what is that deep-seated fear in that person?
Mm. Being alone, mm. being unloved, and being alone. What I think is really interesting is it's like sometimes it's like two sides of the same coin, but it's just reacting to the problem in a completely different way. It's like avoidant people don't believe that they can find love, right? Or they're unsure. So what they do is they run away from it. Like, okay, it can't be safe. But anxious people are like, I'm taking on the battle. I'm going to keep trying. And this might be the one. This might be the one. And when they find something they think is the one, they often, and not always, can almost become quite obsessed, you know, whether that is on dating apps. So I guess for the anxious person, the core is like, am I lovable? Yeah, am I lovable? This is like this eternal question. And then wanting to like ask everything if it's true. You know, am I lovable? You know, a friend, am I lovable? And then the energy of that creates a dynamic of anxiousness because the question is unanswered. And then the trying to get the answer that they desire, not the answer they fear, creates these loops of anxiety and creates a loops of pushing people away and lots of chasing unavailable partners, chasing unavailable relationships, chasing unavailable friendships. Like, you know, because this anxiousness and avoidance isn't just a intimate relationship piece. And I've seen it a lot in people's lives. It touches family. It touches careers even, you know? Yeah.
Honestly, the more I sit with it and, you know, my best teacher is relationships, you know, especially the ones that didn't work out, but also just getting to know these different parts of myself, because I definitely have a very strong anxious part and a very strong avoidant part. And I think both parts have a lot of anxiety in them. Like, I think at their core, there's a ton of anxiety and a ton of fear. And to me, the deeper I get into it, I think the fear at the core of it is the same. And it's really like an absence of self. Like, I don't know myself, or I don't trust myself, or I don't know how to love or care for myself. And I don't know how to actually be dependent on someone in a way that feels safe. Like, I think there's also this relationship with dependence that's like really dysfunctional. Again, probably because of our templates and our, you know, primary relationships. But I think it's really this just unhealthy relationship with dependence itself. Can I depend on myself? And can I depend on another? And I think sometimes we feel like we have to choose, or we don't feel like we're capable of either. Like, I don't trust myself. I can't depend on myself, or I can't trust anyone else. I can't depend on anyone else. But I the more I strip it down, I think it's actually so much more the same than it is different. Like, it actually doesn't feel as polarized to me anymore as it used to. And I'm just curious how that lands for you, or what you think of that.
Mm. No, that's really beautiful. That is, it's just a dependence thing. It's like, I find my body almost like leaning forward and leaning back, because it's like, can I trust myself? Can I depend on myself? Can I trust you? Can I depend on you? The anxious person leans in to get the answer. I want to get closer to see if I can find the answer to that existential question. The avoidant person leans back and tries to move away from any confirmation of the answer. Like, that feels really, yeah. And there's, I had a thought there. It's like, he leaned back like, oh, I don't want the answer. I'm afraid of what the answer might be. So I want to run away from the question. And the anxious person is afraid of what the answer might be, but they want it answered. Yeah. You know, they want to find this, you know, it's almost like a determination. Like, yeah. I want to find an answer, but not always, because obviously there's some anxious people that do also lean out and they still have the anxiousness. But there is this, like you said, this perennial question about dependence. Like, and I guess it really, you know, my understanding of the kind of attachment theory, I guess it really is that the child's thought was, I can't depend on you. Or I guess at the opposite, it's like, oh, there's too much dependent. You are dependent on me. Mm-hmm. Like, is that feeling for the little child of like, oh, this is too much, or oh, I didn't get enough. It's almost like that. And we then decide what that means in terms of how we can depend on ourselves, self-trust, and the world, because yeah, that self-trust piece, you know, it's just a really tricky one for us as humans to grapple with in the space of relationship. Because we have to be like, can I trust my decisions and choices?
Yeah. Yeah. I think trust is like core to this. And I think for those of us, which I think is most of us, have had attachment trauma, especially early in life, and then reenacted that until we woke up. So there's a long history, right, of like attachment trauma or ruptures, but that ruptures trust. That ruptures our trust in ourselves. And the deeper I look at trust, it's more like, can I trust the sensations in my body more than I trust the stories in my brain? Because the stories in my brain are usually distortions, but can I trust what I feel in my body and stay with that? And then it's like, can I trust my reality? Like, that's been a big piece that's been kind of coming into my peripheral, is just being able to validate my own reality. And it's not a matter of being right or wrong, or someone else, you know, having to hold that exact same perspective. But like, can I trust my reality because of the sensations in my body? And stand in that truth and be able to like express that truth, but not from a lens of good or bad, right or wrong, or seeking validation or agreeance of it, but just, can I actually trust my experience in this moment? Mm. And I think a lot of us, like on this journey, I know for myself, a lot of times it's like, no, not in this moment. And when I can't trust my reality in this moment, like, I'm learning those are the pockets where I don't know myself well enough yet. And I think that brings up that like primal panic in all of us when we find ourselves in a pocket of like, I don't know myself in this kind of conflict, or I don't know myself in this moment or this environment or with this type of person or reaction. So I don't know. I don't know if that makes sense at all, but to me, it's like, these gaps where I'm like, I don't know myself in this moment. Mm. And yeah. Then how do I find myself in those moments?
Mm. Yeah. And I'm like, as you're saying this, it's like there's a gap, and can I trust this reality? You know, the physical sensations I'm having, they might be a fear and nervousness and whatever. It's like, can I trust this reality? And you might be looking around and you're in a beautiful field of lavender. And you're like, I can't trust this reality, right? Mm-hmm. Because these sensations I'm having of fear and so forth do not match with the world that I'm experiencing right now. And I can see with my eyes from a neutral place. And then my mind kind of goes to, it's like, ah. And then it's like, how do you resolve that in that moment? Because if we can sit in that, like, oh, I can't trust this and that's okay, then we could really be like, why am I feeling this way? What's occurring in my mind? What's occurring in my body? What's occurring in this moment? But if we seek some certainty quickly, which I think is a habit of humans, right? Then we look for a story to give sense to what we're incurring. And it creates it gives us a sense of safety, because I guess in that space of not being able to trust reality, then we can instantly feel very unsafe. And then we might want to pin that on something like, that person did that thing, or that thing is not the way it should be. And then we actually lose the moment of growth that you're expressing there.
Yeah, I love, we do pin it on external things to get this like pseudo sense of safety. Like, we're so quick to make meaning out of certain things. And I think that's actually a common quality that anxious and avoidant people do have, is urgency. But it doesn't look the same, like how the adaptation looks completely different. But there's a sense of urgency at coming to a conclusion, like rooting it into something. And, you know, when we're in anxious or avoidant, we're also in fight or flight. So we're super dysregulated. So we're super black and white about things. But it's like this urgency to get to a conclusion, because I don't know myself right now. And it's like a really interesting space to bring consciousness to those moments and then to bring breath into the body and just to be with those sensations. To me, like that's the work. Like that's the work. How can I be with these sensations, the emotions that it evokes when I don't know myself in this moment? And it's intense work, but I think that's where we can create transformation and like more intimacy with ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, wisdom is really possible. Like self-learning is really impossible. Is possible in the moments where we're like, ah, there's a space here. What is here? And we get curious. And it's like you said, it can be intense because we've got emotions happening. And then we also have to bring a level of consciousness. And my opinion is of a lot of men's work, this is like the thing that underpins so much of it. Like in my eyes, it's like, can you be with the experience, feelings, emotions, pattern, story, while maintaining presence and awareness? Because the way that we are taught into being, not just men, everybody, is just to like, just be flung around the place by our experience and our feelings and emotions. Like if we look at a newspaper, we look at celebrity news and all this, it's just full of people who are just going, oh, in this moment, I suddenly felt threatened. So I threw this table, you know, and we don't really like go, wait, that's not a great way to live. We don't really have that conversation long enough. But this part of, you know, I see men's work or everybody's work really is like, can I be of experience? Like you said, emotions and feelings. Can I be also conscious of not just the experience, but what else is out there? What else is possible? What else is in my mind? What else could be the perspective? Or, you know, just sometimes the awareness we need is to be able to just have the emotion. And like you said, like be able to breathe at the same time. Like it's such a great practice that has, it sounds so simple, you know, but actually it's like it's training you for the deepest work of your life.
Mm-hmm. And to me, breath is the pathway to that, because what I feel if I'm not deeply engaging in that, my breath is like to hear, you know, it's like so shallow. But the second I invite it to drop in, then I touch all the stuff that I don't want to touch. But like that's where we start to actually feel and release. But it's really like the breath is what leads us there. Like the breath is such a guide to what's actually happening or what we're resistant or unwilling to feel. Anytime I'm like in resistance, my breath is like so shallow. It's like, no, thank you. Not feeling that. Okay, fair. And then you drop into the breath and you're like, oh my God, there's a lot there. There's a lot there. And it's, you know, it's a lot to hold everything that's happening on the inside of us and then between us. And I know when you and I spoke a few weeks back, you'd really kind of breathed life into like the space between us, like the relational field. And I just want to ask if there's anything you wanted to speak to in that, because I think that field is like so potent and powerful.
Mm, yeah. We feel the space, and we've touched on this, like we unconsciously fill the space with like thoughts. And I like to almost look at like we have a little phantom in front of us, like a ghost. I guess it's, you know, when we think of glasses and lenses, right? But it's like it sits in front of me and it's like all my projections of myself, right? Sit inside this, my negative beliefs, my ideas, like how I've, like what I'm worried about the world. It also kind of sits here. And behind there is almost like the witness, you know, the witness that's me, that's like clear and spacious and conscious and open. And in front of you, you have your own little phantom there that's like been, had all your traumas and your worries and your fears. And we just spend so much time coming from the witness, saying something that's like, that's there. It gets processed through our fears and our worries, our concerns. And then we communicate that to someone else's fears, worries and concerns. And then that gets taken in and everything is so distorted. Like everything is so distorted in a conversation, in how we perceive other people's actions a lot of the time, or how we even perceive our own actions, or we worry about what actions mean. And it means that the field between us, the space between us is just full of, it's full of fog. It's full of garbage. And like all the information that's coming to us is like being filtered through the fog and the garbage. And we wonder why like relationships are so chaotic or communication is so chaotic. And I think the work is, you know, relationally, like, you know, because relational work, it helps us in every aspect of our lives, from, you know, career to family, is to become aware of like, what's my garbage and how does it distort my world? How can I start to clean it out? And how do I start to become aware of like, oh, look, you know, avoidance is just like a piece of garbage, like a large piece of garbage that we filter the world through, where we go, oh, look, she left a toothbrush. And now I'm thinking she's trying to marry me, you know? And like, if we don't realize that that is part of the fog, that's part of the garbage, then we think that that is the real information. And there's so many places that we see this in our lives, in our societies, where we think the garbage is the actual information, and we have to like learn to kind of like pull it apart and detangle it. And so much of the time, I think in relationship, it's like when you really pull apart the garbage from the communication or from the information we're getting, it's like they want love, they're bidding for love, or they're trying to protect themselves. Mm-hmm. And like, you know, is there anything else that's really happening? Right. But we have so much garbage on there. So often we give it another million other meanings that's not there that actually hurt our ability to relate and to connect to the people that we really want to.
Yeah. It's so just cleaning up that field so we can actually like see each other clearly. Mm. We can see ourselves. We can meet somewhere that's vast. Mm. Full of possibility, full of intimacy.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And I'm curious to kind of tie all of this together. We've definitely danced in it and touched on it, but how would you define intimacy? Like, what is that? What does it actually mean to you? If you could even sum it up.
Yeah, yeah. I think it is the range of levels of closeness. It's a closeness. It's a being seen, like at its like really deep levels. It's like allowing someone to really see the deepest parts of your soul and who you are, beyond the garbage, beyond the body, down to like who you are as a soul, a possibility, light, source. And then on the maybe the lighter end, it's just sharing a part of you with somebody. You know, I was in a men's circle a while ago, and we were talking about sex and intimacy. And I said, oh, you know, even this circle of us men here talking about sex and intimacy, this is intimacy. Mm-hmm. Because we're having to share parts of ourselves and be vulnerable and open up parts of ourselves that we might not do in our normal lives. Mm-hmm. And it creates an intimacy in this group instantly. Mm-hmm. When we do that, when we feed our relationships with intimacy, they grow in their connection between two people. They grow more and more. When we starve them of intimacy, we create separation, we create conflict, we create loneliness as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that. I so resonate with that. Like, it really is that closeness and like that revealing and kind of being able to see someone on a soul level, like beyond all of these projections. But it's like our responsibility for someone to actually be able to see that. I think a lot of times we project that, like, you need to see me. And it's like, no, actually, I think I need to really like reveal and open and clean out my garbage. I'm going to start using that line, clean out my garbage so that like I see myself first and I can allow you closer. The closeness piece, I know that's like a deep work for myself and my work in the world is just closeness. Like, what closeness level can I tolerate and how much closer can I let someone? And to me, it's like mission work, life work, soul work. And I think intimacy is such medicine for us.
Yeah. And the intimacy we can have with ourselves, I think, is like a key pillar that we don't often think about. How willing are we to see our own like feelings and emotions that we have about us, mm-hmm. and that we've had? How willing are we to just like lean into those. You know, for me, it was how will am I to lean into the sadness and the grief and the heartbreak and be with what is part of me, that part of me that I don't really want to be into because it hurts. Mm-hmm. And when we are willing to go there more and more with the parts of ourselves, then our ability to then be with other people in those states increases incredibly.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. It's just wild how it's all relational, right? Like everything is relational. How we relate to ourselves, our bodies, our emotions, our sensations, our realities, and then how we're able to do that for others around us and continued practice. It's a forever practice.
Yeah. Forever practice. I like that. It's a wonderful way to put it.
Thank you so much for this conversation. Like I feel so settled in my body right now. I just love that feeling when, you know, there's like a, I'll speak for myself. I don't know if this is happening for you, but just like a co-creation that just feels really genuine and open and safe. So I just want to thank you for, you know, co-creating such a safe space. And like, I just love that feeling of settledness with someone when you just drop into something and it's like, totally resonate with that. And so thank you. Thank you for that.
No, thank you for having me. Thank you for also creating that space for I like to call it easefulness, you know, not that it's easy. I feel at ease.
Yeah.
In this. And it's like that, like I love the feeling of ease because it's like, I can relax. My body can just settle in. I can also open, you know, I might be with you and be with me at the same time. And that's, it's always a gift.
Such a gift. I'm so grateful for that. And before I close, I do want to just ask, where is the best place for people to find you and follow your work and work with you?
Yeah, I'm a pretty active Instagram person. You can find me there, like posting very regularly and talking about stuff. But I know that not everyone's on Instagram, so you can find me then. I have a podcast called The Authentic Man with David Chambers with, you know, 270 plus episodes there if you want to listen to me and other wonderful people talking. And then obviously there's also my website, which, you know, you can find out a bit about. I'm not super active on the website. It's there as a kind of placeholder place, but between the podcast and Instagram is the best places to really kind of get into my world.
Beautiful. Well, I will make sure to link all that stuff so people can find you. And just thank you again for being here, for the work that you've done on yourself. Like as a woman, it's always just such a gift to sit across from a man who you're like, oof, like I feel this person's done so much work. I feel their sense of self and the safety. Like it's truly a gift. So thank you.
Thank you.
If this podcast feels in resonance with you, I would be so grateful for 30 seconds of your time to follow or subscribe to the Return to You podcast, to leave a 5-star rating and review, and to share this episode with someone you love who's on the journey home to themselves too. Thank you so much for being here. I see you.